Welcome to Beyond the Divide, where we cut through the noise to uncover the truth. No matter our differences, we're all just people and we're united in a pursuit of a better tomorrow. Join us as we challenge the divide, celebrate our shared humanity, and build a future for ourselves, our families, and our nation. I want to speak directly to the parents of today, and to those of you who are of the age to become parents, even if you haven't yet joined that elite group. This world is quickly becoming a very scary place, and we fear for our children. But it's not enough for us to say that we're afraid for them and the world that they will inherit. We have to rise up and enact change. Because if we truly want our kids to inherit a world that's full of common sense, freedom, and liberty, then we must make it so, because nobody else is going to do it for us. I want to tell you a story, and most of you are probably very, very familiar with this one, but it's one of my favorites from the Old Testament, so I'm going to go ahead and tell it anyway. Many, many, many years ago, we're talking somewhere around 1500 or so BC, there was a great nation upon this earth, and there was a lineage of people that lived in this nation. So really, we've got like two groups of people. Okay? We've got the Hebrew people and we've got the Egyptian people. And if you think about it, these guys are actually distant cousins. So we've got this land. We've got these two sets of cousins. And one of the sets, the Hebrew set, is multiplying like crazy. And they just have so many kids. They're living a beautiful life. And so one day, the leader or the Pharaoh of the Egyptian set, he's kind of new on the scene. He wasn't around when Joseph saved the Egyptians from famine and stuff like that. So he just sees this enormous group of Hebrew cousins and he's like, we could use that. And so he decides that he's going to enslave the Hebrew people. And we don't really know how it happened. The story doesn't really tell us if there was like a war, or if he just captured their leaders and was like, okay, now you're our slaves. But however it happens, it happens. So now we've got the Egyptian cousins and they're ruling over their Hebrew cousins. And they're making them build all sorts of stuff. They're talking like hard, back-breaking labor. And this goes on for a while. And the Jewish people are still just trying to make the best of the situation. And they're still multiplying. And eventually, this scares the Pharaoh. So we're talking like probably five or six Hebrew cousins for every Egyptian cousin. It doesn't totally say, but it does say that, you know, there was a great difference in the population. And so the Hebrew or the Pharaoh, he's like super scared and he doesn't want to get his hands dirty. So he decides that he's going to go to the midwives of the Hebrews, and he's going to have them kill every male baby that is born in the Hebrew community. And they're supposed to do this before the mother realizes that the baby's alive and breathing. So, like, baby comes out, smother the baby, you know, do whatever you need to do, but do not let the mother know that that baby was ever alive. And the midwives, they kind of get together, and they're like, we are God-fearing women, and we are not going to do this. And so they go on like this for a little bit. And then Pharaoh realizes that they're not doing what he commanded them to do. So he calls them in to ask them, you know, what's going on? Why are you not doing this? And so the midwives decide to lie. And they go to Pharaoh and they say, okay, well, the truth of it is that the Hebrew women are so strong that they're delivering their babies before we get to them. So by the time we get there, you know, mom's done, labor's over, baby's out, baby's alive, baby's crying. There's no possible way that we can kill the baby at that point. So then Pharaoh decides, okay, well, since you haven't been doing this, then I'm going to take every male child under the age of two and I'm going to get rid of them. So he orders his soldiers to gather them all up and dump them into the Nile River, where they will be swept away by the current, they will drown, they will be eaten by the crocodiles. Losing a child is the greatest pain I have ever known in this life. And I wouldn't wish it on anybody. So, as you can imagine, there is great, huge sorrow among the people of the Hebrew community during this time. And they are crying out to God for deliverance from this awful situation. And so, during this time that the Pharaoh's men are hunting down these babies and toddlers, there's a woman, and her name is Jochebed, and she gives birth to a son. And she is like, there is no way in heaven or earth that they're going to take my baby. And so she decides to hide him from Pharaoh. And she's able to hide him for 3 months. And I don't know about you, but if I had to try to figure out a way to hide a newborn baby for 3 months, I would probably go crazy. So after 3 months, she realizes that she just can't hide him anymore. And I imagine this is probably because that's right around the time that your newborn isn't sleeping most of the day and they're starting to get more mobile. He's probably cranky. And so she just can't do it anymore. So she comes up with an idea. And for me, I think this can seriously only be an idea that was planted in her mind from God, because it's just such a crazy notion. And if she gets caught, she's most certainly going to be killed. So she decides she's going to sneak him down to the river. And she has put together this tiny little boat, and it has a top on it, so it's like a football boat. And she hides this football boat in the weeds along the edge of the river where she knows that the Pharaoh's daughter goes. And so it just so happens Pharaoh's daughter is there. She finds the football boat, she opens it up, and she sees a baby inside, and he's crying. And she immediately knows there's absolutely no way this baby is Egyptian. But she decides that she's going to keep him and she's going to raise him as her son. And through all of this, the baby's sister is watching them from the weeds. And she comes out and she comes to Pharaoh's daughter and she tells her that she can go find a wet nurse for the baby. And so she goes, she gets their mother, Jochebed, and she brings her to Pharaoh's daughter and she tells her to go ahead and take care of the baby until he's no longer in need of a wet nurse. So Jochebed takes the baby, she takes care of him, and then when he no longer needs her, she takes him back to Pharaoh's daughter. And at this point, Pharaoh's daughter names him Moses, which means drawn out because she drew him out of the water. And she raises him into adulthood. So now we have an adult Moses. And he had to have known that he was pretty much adopted, although he was raised in the Egyptian courts. And so he goes out one day and he sees an Egyptian guard, and this guard is beating a Hebrew man. And Moses ends up killing the guard, and then he hides him in the sand. And he's looking around and he doesn't see anybody else, so he thinks he's in the clear. And he returns home. And then the next day he goes out again and he sees two men fighting with each other. And he's like, "Why are you guys fighting? You're supposed to be like countrymen. What's happening?" And one of them turns to Moses and he's being pretty mouthy and he's like, "Why do you care? Are you going to kill us like you killed the Egyptian?" So then Moses knows that he was seen and that people know. And when Pharaoh gets word that Moses had killed an Egyptian, he decides that he's had enough of this Hebrew boy in his court and he is going to kill him. And so Moses runs, and he runs fast and he runs far, and he ends up in the camp of the Midians. And he's accepted into their tribe. He kind of saves the high priest's daughters from a bunch of bandits at the well when they're trying to water their sheep. So he gets accepted into their tribe and he gets to marry one of the daughters of the high priest. And he becomes a shepherd. And he's here for a while. And his wife, you know, gives him sons. And the Pharaoh eventually dies. And the Hebrews are still crying unto God for deliverance. And the interesting thing to me about this is that there are so many of them. If they rose up together as one people against the Egyptians, they could free themselves. But for whatever reason, they can't or they won't. And so they're just crying to God for deliverance. And God hears their cries. And he decides that they've had enough and he's going to go ahead and deliver them. And I want to remind you guys that God does not spare us the refiner's fire. But if we have faith, he has promised that he will walk beside us and he will deliver us out the other side. So he decides that these Hebrews have had enough of the fire and he's going to go ahead and deliver them. And we are told in other parts of the Bible that the eyes of man cannot handle seeing God in the flesh. So he decides he's going to appear to Moses as a burning bush. So Moses is out one day with the sheep and he's going around and he goes into this cave and all of a sudden this bush is on fire. And keep in mind, Moses was raised in an Egyptian court. He probably has had very little to do with any knowledge of the God of Abraham because he was raised with several gods and they didn't really have a whole lot to do with the Egyptian people. Like they don't intervene in the lives of the people. And so he sees this burning bush and he is like wandering around and he's checking it out and he's like looking at this bush. He's trying to figure out why it's burning, but it's not being consumed. And so this, you know, goes on for a little bit and all of a sudden, from the middle of the bush, the voice of God speaks to him. And I imagine he's probably a little bit freaked out at this point. So God tells him, remove the sandals from your feet, for the place on which you stand is holy ground. And he says, I am the God of thy father, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And so at this point, Moses is panicking. He's trying to hide from the bush and from this voice. And God just patiently tells him, I have seen the oppression of my people. I have heard their cries, and I have come down to deliver them from Egypt. And he tells them he's got a place in mind for them, and it's a blessed land, and it's a land flowing with milk and honey, and it's fertile. It's going to take care of them. You know, it's a good place for them. So he says, okay, Moses, you are my guy. I'm going to send you to Pharaoh and you're going to lead these people to that promised land that I have in mind. And we know from a little bit later on in the Bible that Moses is not a perfect human. None of us are. But he has a speech impediment and he's kind of reclusive. And so he looks at this burning bush and he's like, who am I to go to Pharaoh? And I'm sure he's probably got a whole list of people in his head that he thinks would be a better fit for this job. But God tells him, you are the one I have chosen. I will be with you and you will accomplish this task that I have given you. And Moses throws back at him. He has no idea what to say to the people when he gets there. Why would they believe me? And for every question that Moses has, God has an answer. And eventually Moses runs out of reasons why he can't go. So he kind of resigns himself to the fact that he's going. And then God starts to warn him that this is not going to be easy. And Pharaoh isn't just going to be like, oh, sure, here you go. Like, have your people, have fun. We don't need them anymore. You know, thanks for building my pyramids. We're done with you now. Go ahead. And so Moses is still like panicking about this. He's really worried about the Hebrews accepting him and following him. And so God says, okay, give me the staff that you have in your hand. And he puts his power into the staff so that Moses will be able to call upon the power of God when the time is right. And he's going to be able to prove to both the Hebrews and the Egyptians that he's telling the truth. And then he's just going on and on about why he can't do this. And just like a child, he has to know exactly how it's all going to work and who's going to be sent to help him speak to the people and what's going to happen. And so by this point, God is getting a little bit frustrated with Moses. And so God is like, boy, I have a plan, trust in it, and just go. Like, stop stalling, you know, like, it's like a toddler at bedtime. I need a drink. I need to go to the bathroom. I need a snack. No, you're done. You've asked all your questions. I've given you every single answer. I'm going to provide for you. I'm going to be with you. So just go. So finally, Moses is like, okay, I will go. And he goes home and he tells his father-in-law that he has to go. And he takes his wife and his sons and he sets off for Egypt. And he knows, because God warned him, that this is going to be hard and that Pharaoh's not going to just give up the people. It's going to take a lot of convincing, and that Moses has to be prepared to do all of these signs and bring down all of these plagues. And he's still going to say no. And so Moses is thinking about all of this while they're traveling. And keep in mind that Moses is going to be doing all of these things to the people that he grew up with, and to his adopted family and, you know, his community. And these people are going to suffer directly from his hand. So I imagine that this is a very long journey for him. And his mind is occupied with worry and fear and how am I supposed to do this? And then when he reaches Egypt, everything plays out just the way that God said it would. And he goes to Pharaoh and he tells Pharaoh why he's there. And he says, let my people go. And Pharaoh basically laughs in his face. And so Moses starts to show signs and do things. And then Pharaoh's priests, through their dark magic, start to mimic some of the things that Moses is doing. And so Pharaoh doesn't see these as being the power of God, because his priests have the same power. And so Pharaoh laughs at him and he's like, nope, sorry. And so Moses starts bringing down fire and brimstone, and there's frogs and there's bugs and there's boils and there's rivers of blood and there's plagues and famine and just horrible, awful, nasty things. And after every hardship that Moses brings, the Pharaoh ups the game. And in turn, he makes the work of the Hebrews that much harder. So he kind of starts off with your work days are going to be longer. And then they make bricks for the building. And so they used to have the straw for the bricks was supplied for them. And then Pharaoh decides, well, we're not going to supply the straw anymore. You're going to have to go out and you're going to have to cut your own straw. But you're still going to have to make the same amount of bricks that you made before when we supplied the straw. So it just keeps building and building, and their days are getting harder. The work is getting longer. And so Moses is not a very popular guy around town right now. And finally, God sees that Pharaoh is just not going to be convinced. And so he tells Moses to go to Pharaoh and tell him that God is going to send his destroying angel, and he's going to kill the firstborn of every family in the land of Egypt if Pharaoh doesn't let the Hebrews go. And there will be a great cry in all of Egypt, such as never has been nor ever will be again. And Pharaoh still refuses. So now we've come full circle, and God is going to take a child from every Egyptian home, just like the Pharaoh did so long ago. So God gives Moses the instructions for what is known today in the Jewish faith as the Passover. And he tells them that at the end of the Passover, that they are to take the blood of a lamb and paint the doorposts with it, so that the destroying angel will know to pass over that home and not to take the life of the firstborn child from that family. So they have the feast of the Passover, they paint the doorposts with the blood of the lamb, they go to bed, having faith that this is going to work. When Pharaoh wakes up in the middle of the night and finds that his firstborn has died. So through all of this, all of these plagues, all of this craziness, he has held firm. Until he loses a child, and that breaks him. And so he goes to Moses in the middle of the night, and he tells Moses and Aaron to gather up the Jews and the Hebrew people and to leave. And so Moses and Aaron gather the people, and they make haste to the shores of the Red Sea, where they stop to rest. And about this time, Pharaoh's pretty ticked off. And his heart is hardened beyond anything that it was before. So he gathers up all of his soldiers, and they are riding straight for the Red Sea, where the Hebrews have stopped. And they're just going to kill all of them. And so, as Pharaoh and his soldiers are bearing down upon the Hebrew people, here we have one of the biggest displays of God's power in all of the Old Testament. Moses has to simply raise his staff, and the sea parts, and a way is provided for them. So a dry path right down the middle just appears. And they're able to escape to safety on the other side, and most of Pharaoh's men are drowned in the sea when it closes up as they're chasing down the Hebrew people. Now, Moses was never able to enter the land that was promised by God. He took the people safely to the other side of the Red Sea, where they kind of spread out and they rested and they complained for several years. They couldn't just be happy that they had been freed from slavery. God was providing for them through manna, and they got to the point where manna wasn't good enough. They wanted meat, and they, you know, slowly they're just complaining. They're falling away from God. And so after several years of this, God has Moses bring about the Ten Commandments. And then at the age of 120 years, as the Bible tells us, Moses was finally allowed to return to the arms of Jesus. The scriptures tell us that he was buried by God himself at the top of Mount Nebo, and his legacy is etched in a people transformed from slave to a nation. Mahatma Gandhi used to say, "Be the change you wish to see in the world." And I think that this resonates very deeply with the story of Moses. Moses was the change. Parents, we are the Yocheved of this generation. We must nurture the seeds of change in our children and in our families. Our homes are the ark that shields them from a world that will seek to down their potential. We have to protect them. We have to teach them. We have to understand that our children are the Moseses of tomorrow, and they are called from the reeds of ordinary life to an extraordinary purpose. We must teach them to have faith and trust in them to lead, and teach them to have respect and love for their fellow man. Moses, drawn from the Nile, became the flame that led a nation to freedom. We must be the hands that will weave the ark and guide our children with faith. And our youth must be the spark that dares to burn brightly, even in exile. As it says in Deuteronomy 31:6, "Be strong and of good courage, for the Lord thy God doth go with thee." It's not going to be easy. We're all going to face the refiner's fire. But God promises that he will be with us. And he will lead us through the fire, and he will bring us out the other side. Be the change today, tomorrow, and until we reach the promised land of the Lord. Perhaps America is a land flowing with milk and honey. The promised land that the Lord dedicated and set aside for faithful people. A land that would be a protection and would allow us life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness can only have been set aside from God. It's a beautiful day, guys. Go strike up a conversation with someone. Learn from them. Let them learn from you. Find the common thread with people. Thanks for joining me. Have a great day.